You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. You're with me, Dr. Michelle, on Dr. Michelle Live. We're walking this road together. Sometimes it's a really rocky road. Sometimes it's a nice, easygoing road. Sometimes it's fun. Sometimes we delve into a lot of really dark things. But you are walking with me today. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You can call or text 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can also email me, dmlive at breadboxmedia.com. We've been doing a lot of things over the last couple weeks using Robert J. Wick's Riding the Dragon, 10 Lessons for Inner Strength in Challenging Times, a very small book, very easy to read, and a nice template. But we've been using that kind of as the skeletal frame for a lot of different conversations and a lot of different topics. All of them come down to how do we get to a place where we live life's challenges. We utilize all that we're given, all of our hardcore, hardwired ability to heal and find joy and find fun and find life amidst all the pain, sorrows, and trials and tribulations. How do we do that? And how I like to go to the meat of it all. I like to get down into the nitty-gritty. Sometimes it just isn't enough to be talking about the troubles that you have with a spouse or a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a child, and just talk about the light kind of conversational communication stuff. Oftentimes, our problems that we have on the surface in our day-to-day life stem from something a lot deeper. The trap is to get stuck in figuring out what the deeper is. That's why it's really good to get really good therapists, and they're few and far between. Good therapists, good physicians, good spiritual guides. And it's difficult, and not because they're not smart or they're not gifted. Sometimes the depth at which you need to go is further than what they're equipped to. They can't go there with you because their general way of viewing the world is, in a more general sense, general. So what I like to do is say, okay, we can go on the lighter parts. We can also go on the deeper parts. I think we need to pay honor and homage to the fact that if you have a very deep, 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 deep wound, you can still find nuggets. You can still find those little, you know, when you used to, remember they used to see all the, I haven't seen them in a long time, those rock climbing walls and those little projections that come out that you just grab onto. You can find those to grab onto, even in the general. So often we get discouraged. We get very discouraged because we're looking for someone to say, I know where you have been. I myself was molested as a child, or I myself was abandoned, or I myself was in the hospital for my first 3 years of life, or I myself had my parent die. I myself got beaten up by a schoolyard person, whatever it could be. Because then we can grasp on like, oh yeah, you understand. And look at you, you're doing okay. Well, there are more people out there with that could say that to you than you'd ever know. But just like you don't go and lead with your wounds, hopefully people just don't go around leading with their wounds. What we need to do, what we want to do is, how did you overcome it? How are you the overcomer? How did you climb Mount Everest? Not just that, oh, I walked up there and then I froze to death. How did you do it? How did you get in that ship and go from one continent to another in 10 52 or whatever it could be. How did you do it? Show me how you do it. So we have our eyes open all the time. And in the meantime, we get our little drinks of water. We get our hydrations. We get our way stations along the way as fellow travelers in the form of spirituality, in the form of pleasure, in the form of animals, in the form of joy, in the form of humor. And we have to take heart in all of that. I will go back to the priest who is a very respected pastor. He's been now, this was probably 15 years ago when I was speaking to him and he said this, but he's a very practical person. He used to be an accountant, very practical person, very organized, kind of no nonsense. But he is the one who coined, I don't know if he coined the phrase, but he used the phrase about people walking around in a novena cloud. And what he meant by that was people get so into the fantasy, into the what they think is the epitome of piousness, that they lose sight of their life. They lose sight of their life. He also went on to talk about when he has people who are very depressed as a spiritual counselor, not as a therapeutic counselor or a marriage counselor or a psychiatrist or a physician. What he did is he said, when I get people who are very depressed and I'm putting in my piece of the puzzle, because rarely is it going to be one thing. You're not going to get all the answers from one avenue. You're going to get many little answers, many little pieces of the puzzle. And so he said what he did oftentimes was he would steer people away from the doom and gloom psalms, and he would steer them to the more joyous, uplifting psalms or the overcoming psalms. The psalms that David, you can read. I mean, there are a lot of psalms, right? So you can go in there and see, you know, why have you forsaken me? Why am I so down in the dumps? Why is everybody winning? Why is it just so awful? You know, I can't see the light. Where did you go? David was just being a human. And then he had the other side, help me in this war, help me get my enemies, help me do this thing, just help me, please. And then he had the praise. I praise you in all things. I praise you always. You are the one who will lead me when I walk through this valley. You will do this because I've been there with you. And you will lift me up. You will raise up. You are the sky. You are the birds. You are everything. And I can't help but praise you day and night. In the morning, in the night, with the sun, with the moon. So when this priest suggested that, I thought, you know, that's a really great concept. It's a really great idea. So then we fast forward now to 2016 and using this book, Riding the Dragon by Robert Wicks, as a template, we are now in chapter 5, lesson 5, Engage the Spiritual Darkness. And I really wanted to go there earlier, but I thought, I'm not going to do what I always do and jump to the part I want. I'm going to start from page one and I'm going to go through, because usually I read a book, I take my thumb and I start flipping pages and I go to see what's great. Or sometimes I even start from the back and go forward. I have all different kinds of ways that I do things. So, and rarely is it starting from the introduction all the way through. So I thought this time I'm going to do it. This is only let's see how many pages this book is. This book is only 142 pages before the notes. So, and he's got a lot of notes too. So anyway, it's a great book. It's a great find. I love this. He's great, putting together all his experience. And that's what's so wonderful for all of us, is putting together that experience and putting and packaging it as only he can do, because only he has had this experience. So before we get into this engaging the spiritual darkness and what how he's going to bring it together for us only in the spiritual, I think it's really important to go to a place where we understand that it usually is not a singular entity that afflicts us. You might say that you have anemia, and therefore you do not have enough iron in your blood. Okay, but how did that happen? Why did it happen? Is it something in your blood that's a problem? Is it something that is in the lack of dietary substance? Is it something that is being caused by a cancer? Or do you have a bleed? There's all these different reasons why it can occur, but it doesn't just stop there. It stops with not, it keeps going to not enough oxygen. Then it keeps going to what happens with that? Then it keeps going to changing your mood and altering your way you think, altering how tired you are. It goes on and on and on. So that happens to us too. So is it this, do we have spiritual darkness and then that leads to depression? Or do we have depression that leads to spiritual darkness? Do we have, is it clinical? Is it a fact that you just aren't good enough, that perhaps you have a problem? Well, it's none of those, or it could be a little of all of those. Now, with coping skills, poor coping skills, that's awesome, because poor coping skills, you can learn. They're hard to keep up, just like a good nutritious diet is, but good poor coping skills can be unlearned very quickly. When you're in the midst of the sadness, if you're in the midst of the clinical depression, if you're in the midst of spiritual darkness, then that can be a little bit harder, because you're in that proverbial dark forest. You are kind of going through those murky waters, as you see in some of the under the sea documentaries, where you're parting through those, all the seaweed, and it's dark and you don't know whether you're going to have a shark face or a coral reef when you come to the other side. So when we come back from the other side of the break, I want to get into this and look at, does it matter if you have spiritual darkness, clinical depression, or sadness that's causing this particular feeling? Does it really matter? And also, how do we take what seems to be intolerable and make it into a great gift? All that on the other side of the break. I am Dr. Michelle.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me, Walk on This Road, and Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can always log on, breadboxmedia.podbean.com, and get to all the previous podcasts. So check it out. Well, all right. Soren Kierkegaard, as we're talking about ways to look at spiritual darkness, etc., Soren Kierkegaard, the philosopher, said one time, the function of prayer is not to influence God, but rather to change the nature of the one who prays. So as we pray, and as we're talking about going toward the happier psalms, the more joyful psalms, in order to retool and change our physiology and our nature. And we're not changing it. We're just watering one part of the garden and not watering the other part of the garden. That's all we're doing. That's all we're doing. So the function of prayer is not to influence God, says Soren Kierkegaard, but rather to change the nature of the one who prays. Think about that, because that's the deal. Think about Abraham and Isaac. God did not need to be convinced that Abraham would obey him or loved him or was 100% in. Abraham needed to convince Abraham. And this is how God set it up to succeed. He can't just keep going on. You wouldn't do that to your own child. Go in and say, hey, you know, you're doing everything right. You're just doing everything right. You're always so right. This is just so, you're just completely right all the time. And don't you know you are very awesome. You're very this, without a substance, without the child actually writing that paper or learning how to ride that bike or planting that little garden or taking care of that dog. Yes, you are committed. I see that you're committed, but show me you're committed. But not for me, the parent. You don't need to know. You know he's a kid or she's a kid. You know that they're going to go out and play, and the poor dog's not going to go out or eat because they're children. You're teaching them to teach themselves. So when we are faced with a spiritual darkness and we want to say, well, it's a dark night of the soul, and we have been warned over and over again, even St. John of the Cross warns us as he's describing it, that it's easy to say, yes, I'm in the dark night. I've said so many people, I even did that myself. I'm in the dark night of the soul, especially in the early days of conversion or reconversion. But just like everything else, wait, you don't know what's around the corner. You don't know what it will mean for you. And do you only have one? Or do you have it as you mature, you have others? So just like a child, do you have one lesson in life you give your child and that's it? Do you have one disappointment that you help them through and that's it? Do you have one when they say, I will never go on again because I didn't get that ball, or I didn't get that toy, or I didn't get that Xbox, whatever it is? No, that's their worst moment at that point in their life. Well, what about when they get older? You're going to keep having them. That's the way it is. Now, Soren Kierkegaard also said, this goes into your mental health and also goes into your, and he actually was actually rather, a little bit depressing in some respects, but he was a philosopher. That was what he did. He just had that gift of just looking at everything. He saw how everything concretely and metaphorically described life. So one thing he said is the greatest hazard of all is losing oneself. Is losing oneself. So here's his quote. The greatest hazard of all, losing oneself, can occur very quietly in the world, as if it were nothing at all. No other loss can occur so quietly. Any other loss, an arm, a leg, $5, a wife, etc., is sure to be noticed. So what he's saying with that, and I really butcher that one. What he's saying with that is that when you lose yourself, it happens little by little by little. If you were born into a family where you weren't even allowed to develop that self, well, you know, you grow up not developing that. Now, one great thing about the ethereal and about the self is it's never too late. You don't lose it. It may be difficult. It may be underdeveloped. It may be something you shut away and don't think deserves to see the light of day, but you are not going to ever really lose yourself, because the self is the only thing that you can actually count on to keep transcending you. In other words, God created you, which by definition, you have a self. You are the only self of you there is in this world. So you are a self. Okay? So you can never lose you, but you certainly can't ignore you. You certainly can not like you. You certainly can believe the lies of the outside world, or try to rely on the wrong situation, or you can try to mess yourself up as much as somehow you go down the wrong road and you end up messed up, but you will never really lose you. You must transcend, because you're the only you there is in this universe that there ever will be and ever was. There just isn't. And I know starts to sound very cliche, and there'll be never be another you, but there really won't be another you ever. So you have a responsibility, don't you, to be you, because you're it. If you found the only gem on the face of this earth that was a particular gem that had never been seen before and never would be seen again, and you found it on no other planet, you would really protect, cherish and guard that gem, wouldn't you? You are that gem. Believe it or not, with all your frailties, you are that gem. You can have issues, you can have problems, you can have been born with deficits, you can have had this accident, this surgery, that surgery, broken bones. All kinds of things can occur to you so that your frame, your outside physical self, which is just your house, maybe it got beaten up, but the you inside will always be you. So got to take care of that. All right. Here's another Soren Kierkegaard. The most common form of despair is not being who you are. So Kierkegaard knew what it was like, actually personally, to go to those levels of despair where he didn't know who he was, where he felt like he was losing himself. And what happens when you go up and you rise up from these things, you can be an example to others. That doesn't mean that we see people jumping for joy when they're in pain or when they're dying or when they're fearful or when they have problems. It just means that you, when you can right now, when you are spending your time on earth being completely preoccupied with all the other things that have come before you, all the things that have occurred to you, either good or bad, you will never lose yourself, but you can kind of forget yourself for a while. So that's what we're trying to get back to with these 10 lessons for inner strength in challenging times, because the whole idea is to put you in the bank. Put that money in the bank. So during times of despair, during times of betrayal, during times of loneliness, during times of illness, during times of political unrest, you may not feel good about it and you may be scared or upset or completely freaked out, but you will have put enough of you in the bank so you don't run out. And God is merciful and wonderful at all times, because you are never going to run out of you. So that's it. It's an endless supply. So you might as well make peace with it and let's get through this darkness. So we're going to be diving in the rest of this program, lesson 5, starting on page 62 of Riding the Dragon. And it's such a great chapter. It's called Engage the Spiritual Darkness. And I'm going to start it out here. I'm going to read a little bit of it. Most of the troubles we encounter are avoidable. Professional helpers and healers recognize this, practice ways to prevent their own downslide into darkness, and try to teach us ways to avoid unnecessary suffering. Now, this is very important. Your counselors, your doctors, your therapists are people. And never should you, of course we all do, but never should you go in and one, expect that they have conquered darkness, they have conquered depletion, they've conquered illness, or their own habits and hangups and hurts and wounds. Many are in the professions because they have their own wounds. Somebody in their family had cancer, they become a cancer doctor. Somebody had serious depression and they become a psychiatrist or whatever. It's not 100% across the board, but this is what happens because, again, what did I say in the beginning of the program? Oftentimes we want to see someone who's been through what we've been through to know that we aren't the only ones and there is a way to get through it. So that's how you have to look at your very good helpers out there, no matter which profession they come from. I'm Dr. Michelle. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are listening to me on Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4BREAD-4. What is your way when you start sliding into that darkness? What do you do, or what do you look back and see that you did? When we're in it, we don't always know what we do, but if we just take a moment and look back, we'll see that, how did I have little breaks during the day and during my darkness? Oh, somebody told me something sweet or something funny, or a little puppy ran by, or a little child was playing ball, or sometimes that makes people feel sadder. You had something good to eat, or you happened to see a strawberry or a peach growing on a tree. That happened to me just the other day. I was over a friend's house, and they had plum trees and peach trees and lemon trees. And I was just, just kind of feeling like, what's next? Just out by myself with Mozart, my dog, and on this beautiful acreage. And I look over and I saw this beautiful little orange, pink, yellowish, just peeking through these leaves. I thought, what is that? I couldn't tell. Was that a lemon? What is that? So I go over there and I realize it's this beautiful, beautiful, perfect peach. And on the ground were all kinds of peaches. Some of them were perfect. Some of them were all withered. And to Mozart, my dog, started thinking, oh, it must be a ball. So to him, that beautiful peach tree was just the jackpot of balls ready to be thrown. And he was like, oh, wow, trying to pick out which one he wanted. In fact, he even got up on two legs and reached for one with his mouth and grabbed one and then ran with it like, okay, I got the ball I want. It's just awesome. And it's like, what a joy that was. In so many different ways, because not only was it a joy to see how inventive this creature that I call a dog is, and I don't know whether he really thought it was a ball, what attracted him to that peach? They don't really go on and eat peaches that I know of. And he didn't actually eat it. For something that had that has a 200 plus pound per, I think it's pound per pressure bite, he was able to pick a plum off a tree and not pulverize it, because to him, it was a ball. To me, it was beautiful, beautiful colors that glimmered like, come here, come take a look, find out what I am. It was also the smell, the touch. It was also looking at others that looked just as beautiful and then notice there's like a little hole, just a beak size hole that some bird had probably come into, or a hummingbird maybe even. Then there was others that were clearly taken over by a worm or taken over by ants. One's on the ground then fell. So there are a lot of things in life right there for you when you're having these moments of spiritual darkness. I'm going to get into some psalms that totally rock. But before I do, you know, I'm going to do this first. That's what I'm going to do. All right. So here's Psalm 61. Psalm 61 is... it's lead me to the rock that is higher than I. Now that is a very beautiful thought. Just lead me to the rock that is higher than I am. God is always referred to as the rock and the fortress. Peter was the rock, something you can put your feet in on, something you can climb up over, something on top of which you can see much further than you can at its base, something that catches the wind, catches the rain, catches the snow, something that provides refuge, something that provides sight, something that provides perspective. Remember this. Excuse me. Then hear my cry, O God, from the ends of the earth. I will call you. I call as my heart grows faint. Now, in that respect, we can take a look and think, well, now, wait a minute. That's not exactly the happiness that we're talking about. But the fact is that the hope in this psalm is, lead me to the rock that is higher than I, a place where you are, you're impermeable, that impermeable, where you were, that's difficult, where you can see the enemies coming at you and you can get your kind of your footing. You have your refuge, you have your tower. That's what Psalm 61 is all about. The refuge and the tower, the refuge for me, the tower. There are shelters for you. And then the beautiful, I long to dwell in your tent forever and take refuge in the shelter of your wings. And that is really another beautiful image that comes across all through Psalms, through the Old Testament, through the New Testament. Matthew talks about, as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, I have longed to gather you together. And then, of course, he goes on to say, but you guys don't want to have any of it. And that's the whole point. See yourself. And that's why I talk about us walking on the road together. See yourself as part of a bunch of little chickens that we all are. And that God is just saying, guys, I would just come on over here under my wings. Stop just going around, you know, like running off, scattering in all these little different directions. Come under my wings. I long for that. To have you in my tent, to have you under my wings, because you all are same song, different verse. You're all my little chickens. So it goes on to sing in the shadow of the wings, of God's wings, and then goes on to praise him, saying, you know, you've heard me. You've heard that I give these vows. You've heard what I do. We are going to dwell in this place together. You've heard me call. You provide everything I need, shelter. And sometimes we don't see that until hindsight. So let's go back to talk a little bit about this engage the spiritual darkness, because what we're going to find out, it's not about beating it up or that we're going to have this constant feeling of doom and gloom. What it is let's see how all kinds of people get a perspective of the spiritual darkness. And of course, by now, those of you who have been with us through the first five lessons know about this meditative, contemplative imagery. You can use whatever label you want, of having that chair in the center of the living room of your mind, where you go and sit and open up all the windows and doors and sit there calmly and just let whatever comes in, come in, and not feel like you have to engage in it, run from it, but just watch it with God as your guide. And it really can be quite enlightening for you and quite strengthening. So we were talking about the fact that professional helpers and healers oftentimes recognize that much of the troubles that we encounter are avoidable, but they may have been avoidable. Like if it's a war-torn place, it could be avoidable for all kinds of reasons that may not have anything to do with your power. You may be powerless in a situation, but that helping professionals and healers have to do things themselves in order to be healed and to get out of the darkness. It says, however, sometimes a sense of helplessness, confusion, loneliness, and near despair we encounter at periods in our life is unavoidable. So in other words, it could be avoidable in the scheme of things, but when we encounter them, they are unavoidable. Like when we come across, let's say, a car that exploded and is fire and spewing out all kinds of toxins, and we are just driving down the street. Well, you know, you're not going to be able to avoid the interchange you have with that, how you detour around it, what you do about it, how you navigate, how you feel about it, what you do in that time of crisis, that's a little oftentimes avoidable. The spiritual darkness is not mere sadness, nor is it clinical depression or the result of poor coping skills. It is an existential confrontation with ourselves, the human condition, and with what and how we believe about life, fate, and death. For some of us, it is an existential confrontation with what we believe about God. Spiritual darkness may have a very discernible precipitating event. Now, I want you all to see this. So it's seamless. The precipitating event can actually, when you say, well, yeah, that's sad or depressing, it can lead you into spiritual darkness. Loss of a spouse or dear friend, realization of childhood sexual abuse, the dramatic decrease in the confidence others place in you, a parting of ways with a close friend, a serious illness, infidelity that undermines marital trust, a job loss, or repeated misunderstandings or hurtful comments by someone you love. These are only several of the more common triggers. And really, the list is extremely long. In some cases, the beginning of the darkness may be less obvious. In such instances, we find it hard to answer the question, where did it begin? Whatever the case, though, the more important factor is recognizing spiritual darkness for what it is, namely both a devastatingly lonely experience and an opportunity for new spiritual and psychological depth. Neither aspect should be underestimated. So I want to stop there, and I want you to think of a couple of things. First, that when did it begin, or why do I have this feeling? That we all want that. That leads you to your general practitioner, which it should, to make sure you don't have some kind of physical thing going on, or anemia, as I said earlier, or diabetes or thyroid problem that's kind of causing you this feeling of angst or anxiety or depression. But also, we want to know that there's a logical reason, that it's not just some spiritual situation. But what is so important here is that when you are in that place, don't underestimate, don't minimize the fact that, yeah, it is dark, but also don't minimize the fact that you will grow from it and reach a deeper understanding and happiness. I am Dr. Michelle. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me on Dr. Michelle Live. We're walking this road together. We're climbing these mountains together. We're going through the valleys and the rock, the big rock we can climb onto. And we are gathering together under those wings oftentimes to seek the refuge, just like a mother hen does with her little chicks. So now we're talking about the spiritual darkness. Wanted you to think about those two things. When did it begin is a question we always ask, but we really can oftentimes never find an answer. And what answer really would be good enough? You can trace something back to a big trauma or an illness, sure, because those can be precipitating events. But then you collect things in your little bag as you go on in life, and sometimes you need extra help from helping professionals and spiritual guides and friends and strangers and the outside nature. You need that little help in order to sort it out a bit and then also to move on and to go forward. And you know, that's an interesting distinction right there, is that a beautiful young woman who lost her child 3 days after her child was born, several months later, in an experience in nature, actually, with while she was swimming in the ocean, she had a couple of epiphanies. And later, when she wrote about it, she wrote about how she understood how it was all so meant to be. And she said, "I will never move on, but I will. I know now that I can move forward." So that's what I was saying about those physical things that happen. I'm not going to move on from if I lose a leg. I'm not going to get that leg back, may get a prosthesis, but I can move forward from this moment on. And that's what we're asked to do every day of our lives. So he says, as we left before the break, that to recognize both, that you may not know when your experience began, but to honor the fact that it is devastatingly lonely, but it is also, and it is, not just but, and it is an opportunity for new spiritual and psychological depth. And from that, you become bigger and fuller and more beautiful, like those peaches I told you about. And you go through your cycles in life, and each one of them has its beauty and has its fullness. Spiritual darkness, he says, is an awful experience to encounter and go through. But just as important, it is also an unasked for and unusual opportunity to be graced with radically new ways to relate to ourselves, others, even to life itself. There is a Persian proverb that sums it up well. Quote, if life throws a knife at you, you can catch it by the blade or by the handle. Unquote. The question is always, will we recognize and take this opportunity, or will we only focus on the suffering and miss the opportunities for radical inner change and this spiritual experience offers? My sense is that most of us often don't let the possibilities blossom in the darkness. Instead, we hold on to our losses, run away, medicate ourselves with work, alcohol, sex, or even religiosity. That's a novena cloud again, remember, from the beginning of the program. And he goes on, or live out our bitterness in such a way that everything is tainted. We do none of this willfully or consciously, but the personal pain and the unlived joys and peace that could have developed with new learning, or maybe more accurately, unlearning, are nevertheless devastating. One of the ways people are encouraged not to run away from life's necessary spiritual darkness is to help them see the benefits of staying the course. Some of those advantages are, and he goes on to give us some of these advantages. These are the advantages to staying the course. We run away for instant answers, instant medication. This is me interjecting here. Instant answers, instant medication, instant. And we want everything to be changed now. I've seen it, Lord. I know it. Now I need to not feel this anymore. And we do that. It's natural. So here's another thing to add to your repertoire of overcoming and life-giving joy. And really, this he's talking from a place where he sees the worst of the worst. So if you're one of the worst of the worst, you've just had devastation that you just can't get your mind around, and your world is rocked and your foundation is crumbled and you feel like you're free falling, you can benefit from this. Absolutely. One of the most ways people are encouraged not to run away from life's necessary spiritual darkness is to help them see the benefits of staying the course. Some of these advantages are, one, increased motivation and determination to face the darkness in ourselves and others. Number two, greater insight into one's personality style, defenses, values, gifts, spirituality, and areas of vulnerability. Sometimes we can't see the forest for our own trees. And sometimes when the forest gets mowed down or burned, you have no choice. But it's a great way to start going, wow, I never knew I had a pattern of that. Like one of the old veterans said to me way back when he talked about looking back over his records of 30 years, when he couldn't understand why he was feeling the way he was in March. When you realize looking back, oh, I feel this way every March. Wow, I have a pattern. And he said, I didn't know I had a pattern. And it turned out that understanding that helped him. It helped him understand, put some reserve in the bank so that he could go on and understand that, hey, March is rolling around. Don't feel so good. Now I know it's an anniversary date. And then that helps him. It helps them prepare for what might be coming. Then here's number three, less dependence on the recognition or approval of others. Number four, new skills and styles of behavior to complement our usual possibly habitual ways of interacting with others, and number five, a sense of peace that is independent of external success, comfort, and activity. In addition, since there are some negative situations and long-term impasses, such as racism and sexism, that cannot be circumvented, why not let whatever possibilities emerge that can? By staying with our darkness with humility, openness, and what little courage we have, this is exactly what we are inviting. Radical, new possibility and necessary change for the next phase of our life. We're not moving on, we're moving forward. When spiritual writer and Oxford scholar Andrew Harvey was on a journey in India, he experienced a great deal of inner turmoil. Fortunately, he was also quite transparent and often surrounded by ordinary people of good faith. In his contemporary spiritual classic, A Journey in Ladakh, one of them candidly appraised his situation and gave him this hopeful feedback. "You smile a great deal and you listen well, but I see that somewhere you are sad. I see that nothing has satisfied you. No, nothing has satisfied you. Not your work, not your friendships, not all your learning and traveling. And that is good. You are ready to learn something new. Your sadness had made you empty. Your sadness has made you open." The same can be said of practically any negative emotion. Kathleen Norris in Dakota, for instance, notes, quote, "Fear is not a bad place to start a spiritual journey." Thomas Merton writes, quote, "True love and prayer are learned when love becomes impossible and the heart has been turned to stone." That's beautiful for all you out there who have had the loss of love through death, through betrayal, through sickness, through all kinds of things. True love and prayer are learned when love becomes impossible and the heart has turned to stone. It becomes the opportunity. Now, granted, look at that. That's a harsh word. Your heart has turned to stone. So you think, well, I'm just going to be like this the rest of my life. No, Thomas Merton says you can learn when your heart is turned to stone. That's when the openness happens. It gets cracked by God. You don't have to stand there with a chisel yourself. The question when confronted with any form of darkness is, will we stay the course or run or seek a quick fix? Quick fix, people. Pornography, shopping, gambling, sports, excessive workout, dieting, plastic surgeries, running away, finding someone new, workaholism, just anything, drugs, anything. What most people do, we're going to take this very seriously tomorrow and finish up as well, but I'm going to leave this segment with this concept. What most people do, since spiritual darkness is most often viewed as a problem to be solved, most people first and false try harder. But the old maxim, if at first you don't succeed, try again, doesn't work in this instance. It's like bargaining with God at the final stage of a terminal illness. It's like a person facing the darkness using logic, planning, and activities that have worked for them in the past. The only problem is their efficient past approaches don't work this time. Why? Because spiritual darkness is an unsolvable, permanent, and unwanted reality and must be faced directly, trusting that new possibilities are present, but not yet seen. So you go forth today because the possibilities are endless. You just can't see them yet. They will unfold with a trust walk and a little bit of embracing the new. I am Dr. Michelle. We will see you tomorrow and continue on this journey.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.